time is your most precious resource, right? Whether you're an entrepreneur or not, but as a solopreneur, that's even more true.
Welcome to the One Person Business Podcast, the show for solopreneurs, consultants, and contractors who are ready to take charge of their business and reclaim their freedom. Join us as we bring you inspiring stories, invaluable insights, and practical strategies from successful solopreneurs and industry experts, empowering you to create a thriving business that aligns with your unique goals and allows you to live life on your own terms. Here are your hosts, Joe Randall and Carly Reese.
Well, everybody, welcome to the One Person Business Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Carly Reese.
And I'm Joe Rando.
And we are so excited to be back after a very long break. We are finally here for the first episode of season two, and we're very excited because we have San Hong on the podcast today, and we're going to be talking about automation and outsourcing for solopreneurs, how to make your lives more efficient and everything. It's going to be a great episode. Before I get into that, I am going to give a little background for you, Sam, but anything I miss, just feel free to chime in. You can add to it at the end of it. If it looks like I'm reading during this part, it's because I am, because you have such robust background. I don't want to miss anything. So, San has been an entrepreneur for over 15 years in a variety of industries, including real estate development, food and beverage, e-commerce, insurance, financial services, marketing, communications, and technology. What have you not done is the real question. During this time, his companies have generated $15 million in revenue, and his expertise now is in digital marketing and no-code development. With that, he is currently the founder of DriveBase Consulting, a digital acceleration agency that helps small businesses scale through automation. A large percentage of the revenue comes from building custom web and mobile applications leveraging no-code platforms that allows DriveBase Consulting to deliver custom solutions affordably and quickly. He is also an investor and principal in an independent insurance agency and owns an e-commerce business. So that is a lot. San, we are so excited and welcome to the show.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, did I miss anything or did I do okay?
I think you're fine.
Okay, good. Well, so let's just dive in. We have quite a few questions for you today just because automation and outsourcing are so big for solopreneurs and can be so helpful. So let's get into, you gave a recent presentation to a group of solopreneurs, and you mentioned that the way you view success now is different from when you started your career. Can you kind of build on that a little bit?
Yeah. So, I won't go through the full story, but, I kind of am an accidental entrepreneur. I got into entrepreneurship by getting laid off, probably in my mid-20s, and I didn't know anything about entrepreneur getting into it. And so I think I had this vision of what an entrepreneur should be, right? And so there were a couple things that I really got fixated on. So number one was I felt like entrepreneurs had to hire a lot of people. So the more people I had on my team, the more successful I was, you know? And so that was really kind of a badge of courage for me is, I wanted to keep kind of bringing on people. I brought on interns and additional employees. And the other one was just, the other badge of courage, I think it wasn't just me, but like other entrepreneurs I kind of network with is, we talked about how hard we were working, we're doing these late nights and working really hard. And I think those were kind of two data points I took as what a successful entrepreneur should be. I kind of had two life-changing events, probably 3-4 years ago that really changed my whole perception. One was, I had a business that I'd raised money for that failed. And I spent a lot of my time and heart and blood, sweat, and tears trying to get that business off the ground. We raised money for it and failed. And shortly within that time period, my dad, who I hadn't spoken to in probably close to 10 years, passed away before I could go out and talk to him. My daughter had just asked me, hey, she had never met my dad. She wanted to meet my dad. And so we weren't able to. And I think the biggest takeaway from that was time is your most precious resource, right? Whether you're an entrepreneur or not, but as a solopreneur, that's even more true. And so it just reshaped my entire line of thinking. And obviously I applied that towards being an entrepreneur. And so I realized that, now I look at the less I have to do, the better, the more successful my business is and the less employees I have. And really the metric that I tell people is the more revenue you're making per employee, and in this case, you know, if you're solopreneur one, that's really successful, right? You know, if you got 100 employees, but you're making $100,000, that, you know, that's not the sign of a successful business, right? So really, the more you can generate with less employees, that's really the sign of a true successful business. So those are really kind of the two things that I've really shaped pretty dramatically. Obviously, really, literally 180 from where I was.
Sam, I have a question on that. So you're talking about your definition of success, and it makes complete sense in terms of defining it as how few employees you have and how little you have to work. But let me just ask, why is that success? What are you getting from that strategy that you weren't getting from the other one? Is it that you're making more money for the amount of effort you're doing? Is it something beyond that about your quality of life? I mean, how does that
come down? Great question, Joe. So it really comes back to that incident, probably more so with what happened to my dad. You know, now with she's now 10, a 10-year-old daughter, it really is about quality of life, right? Is, you know, you don't wanna being successful as an entrepreneur and then not being able to enjoy any time with your family, that to me is kind of defeats the purpose, right? So really it's exactly what you said, Joe. It's about having a quality of life. And so really, if you can, and maybe it's not completely passive, but kind of the end goal is if you can generate passive streams of income, that's really financial freedom, right? Because my definition of happiness is really kind of morphed into about choice, right? If you choose to do things versus having to do things, that to me is true happiness, right? Because you're choosing to work, you're choosing to do something that you love, and it's making money, great. And so really, without financial freedom, that's hard to make those choices, right? Because you have to make money to live, right? And so if you can be in a position where you can make enough money to support yourself, and then from there, you can kind of create that, you know, be in the position where you can make choices, what do you want, you know, how do you want to make your money? How do you want to live? And then if you love what you're doing, then great, so be it. And then you can kind of do things that you love to make money, if that makes sense. It's really about quality of life and really sharing it with the people that you care about versus spending it trying to make it a money to live.
Well, and Sam, one of the ways that you do that for your business is through automation. That's how you get some of that time back. So for people new to the concept of automation, can you explain some of the advantages and disadvantages?
Sure, absolutely. So let me start with the advantages. Number one is going to be cost, right? In most businesses, people is going to be your most expensive resource, right? So if you can automate things, then you can save cost on kind of human resources, right? Number two is variability, right? Humans are great, but the reality is there's going to be humans have bad days, as good days. And so, you know, the quality of the work will vary and, you know, they'll get a phone call, they'll get a text while they're doing, you know, important things and they'll be distracted. And so you're going to have kind of ebbs and flows in the quality of work. And so with automation, you're not going to have, you know, for the most part, I'm not going to say you're not going to have any variability, but for the most part, you can eliminate a lot of variability because you're having a machine do the work, right? And generally speaking, you're going to have the same thing over and over and over again, right? Machines are really good at doing the same thing over and over and over again. And so you can save on the cost of paying a human. And then also kind of, you know, for something that's really repetitive, you can have a machine do it with a little bit more accuracy. And then the final piece is probably speed as well is, you know, if you have a computer doing it, usually 9 times out of 10 is going to do something faster than a human would. Now, for the downsides, a couple of them are going to be, especially now. I mean, there are certain ways, you know, I think artificial intelligence may change some of these things, but for the most part, machines operate in black and white, right? You know, if this, then do this, right? And so what you lose in that is the ability to make a judgment call, right? Whether that's customer service or, you know, for customer service, for instance, like, you know, there's customers that, you know, they're pushing and pushing and no matter, unless you give them exactly what they want, they're writing you that one-star review, right? And you just know from talking to them. And, you know, at this point, AI probably can't make that judgment call versus a human that's been doing customer service for a while. They're used to interacting with other humans. They can make that judgment call. And so when you lose that judgment call, you can't kind of make decisions on the fly based on a lot of variables that are happening in that situation. And so automation, you kind of lose some of those things. Number two is there's usually an upfront cost to build that automation, right? Usually if there's some program involved or something like that, you know, a lot of solopreneurs that might be kind of cost prohibitive. With no code tools, that's really lowering the bar. And that's what I'm so excited about, no code, but you know, that can lower the bar and kind of make it more accessible to some more. And then the other piece is really, you know, in that black and white scenario, I think I mentioned this when Joe was in my session, you know, if you don't make that automation quite right, and you turn it on, you know, you can have some unintended, you know, effects of that. And so so sometimes it's not so easy to turn it off once you turn it on, right? And so
Has anybody seen The Bear, the TV show?
No.
The Bear? It's fantastic. It's about a restaurant, and the guy inherits a restaurant from his brother who dies. And at one point they decide to take, you know, orders to go, and they turn on the machine. But I don't know what the heck. I can't remember what happened, but this thing starts spitting out orders, and they're like, we don't have enough food. And it was just a complete disaster. I mean, it definitely.
I've had those complete disasters.
I cannot wait for the second season of that. But it was just, yeah, that was just like.
It's probably an exaggerated example, but that's exactly what I'm talking about, right? Like, if you haven't considered every single use case, right, and that use case happens, and you don't have a way to account for it, like it can create a mess very quickly.
And I do disagree, though. I do disagree with it. I think that AI can make judgment calls. They just aren't always good judgment calls. But they'll make the call.
Fair enough. Yeah, fair enough.
Stan, how are you using automation in your current businesses?
Yeah, so probably the best example is the one I gave in the session. And I actually have another piece I'm adding onto it right now that I'm actually super excited about. One of my best performing businesses is an e-commerce business that sells paint by number kits. And so real quickly, if you're not friendly with paint by numbers, it, you know, 80% of what we sell are custom paint by numbers where people send us a photo. We convert it into a canvas with kind of, you know, we basically kind of vectorize the photo, and it spits out a canvas with a bunch of different shapes and numbers attached to it. And basically each number corresponds to a different color. Someone paints the canvas, and it comes out to this beautiful, beautiful rendition of the photo that's sent in.
That's the only way you get a beautiful painting out of me, by the way. The only way.
We'll send you one.
Thank you.
So, but no, it's a cool concept that really blew up over the pandemic. And so one of the pieces, because so much of what we sold were custom kits, what we did that not every company does is we send a proof to the customer. But, you know, we basically had to send the photo to the vendor. They would send us back a proof. We would have the customer approve it. And then, you know, we would let the vendor know, hey, go ahead and produce this kit. You know, so that process of downloading the photo, sending it to the vendor, having the vendor send back the proof, sending it to the customer, and then sending the approval back to the vendor, that took about 5 minutes per order. The last few years, we've done about 5,000 to 8,000 orders per year. So when you do the math, that's, you know, between 750 and 1,000 hours a year. So we basically, using a no-code tool called Bubble, we basically created a dashboard that basically allowed the vendor to upload a proof. Basically, it would import the photo automatically. The vendor could access it from a dashboard we created it. They would upload the proof, which would automatically send an email and text to the customer. And then they would get a link with a approval form that gets sent out. And then the other piece that we threw in there was if they approved it, we asked them if we could post to our social media. If they said yes, it would automatically post that proof to all our social media channels. That cut a 5 minute per order process down to zero. So if you do the math, you know, we literally cut out 500 to a, you know, 1,000 hours a year in our time. That really made a massive, massive difference in that business, right? The other piece, though, that we added recently, which kind of combines kind of a combination I'm really excited about, is artificial intelligence and no code. where we've actually moved, we're now moving production of those kits in-house, right? And so now I just got a shipment that's coming in tomorrow. We're getting 41,000 pods of paint, 1,400 different colors of paint, 500 boxes, 500, brushes. So one of the things that I was really concerned about was managing inventory for that, right? 41,000 pods of paint, 1,400 colors. That's a nightmare. Well, so what we did was the software we're using to create the paint by number kits spits out a color card that has 24 colors, the code for each color, and then how many pods we need to put in, right? So we actually are using an AI tool to scan that color card. And what it'll do is it'll search for that code and automatically update the inventory for that particular code. So it solved a massive problem for us. And again, it's going to be a lot more accurate and a lot quicker than having a human do it, which, I'm not even sure. It probably wouldn't even be worth hiring someone to do that job just because we would eat into all our profits. So, I mean, those are kind of two examples of really automation's a game changer for us.
Well, so for people that are interested, you mentioned Bubble as a tool that you use. Are there any other automation tools out there that you'd recommend for people who are just
getting started? Yeah, I mean, the biggest one is going to be, I mean, Bubble has a steep learning curve. So that's a tough one where, that's tough to come off, right off the streets and learn Bubble. I think the ones that are kind of more kind of user friendly were people that are not as maybe tech savvy or don't kind of have a tech background are going to be Zapier, or there's a few other ones that are like Zapier. So Make is one. I think Padlet is another one where you can take one tool. So like Google Drive or Gmail, you can pull information from that and you can add what's called a trigger. When this happens, do this. And then you can send information to another tool to do kind of another step in the process. And then you can take information from there. And so you can connect Google Drive with Instagram, with Gmail, with all these different tools. And it's pretty user friendly. So that kind of Zapier and all kind of the iterations and copycats of Zapier are probably the easiest ones for most solopreneurs to use kind of right off the bat.
Well, and as you said, like sometimes they can be pricey depending on a solopreneur's budget, but it's an investment.
But, Carly, I'll say something real quick is that I think going back to my original point that time is your most precious resource is everything costs something, right? And the thing is that people forget to put a price tag on their time. And so if they're just solely focused on dollar and cents, then they end up doing everything. But if you're a solopreneur, if you're doing everything, it's going to be hard to scale. And so, there's a price to everything. I think people forget to value the price of their time.
That is a great point and such a good segue into my next question. So automation is big for you, but if people want to scale and they've exhausted all of their automation capabilities, then it's time to outsource. And as a solopreneur, people sometimes think they're cheating if they're outsourcing, but it's not. And we actually highly recommend it. So let's go through what outsourcing is and some pros and cons to that as well.
Yeah. So with outsourcing, I think it's important to kind of note that there's kind of onshore and offshore outsourcing, right? So onshore is going to be kind of based in the US, offshore is going to be based in a country that's not the US, right? And so when people refer to outsourcing, probably 90% of the time they're referring to offshore outsourcing, right? And so basically you're using essentially virtual assistants. I don't know kind of the exact definition, the Webster's definition of outsourcing, but essentially you're using a virtual assistant who's not an employee. And typically if you're using offshore outsourcing, you're using a virtual assistant in another country. Hands down, the biggest advantage and why most people would do it, if it didn't have this advantage, then you probably wouldn't be using outsourcing, right, is the cost difference, right? And in most countries that are big for outsourcing, so that's going to be a lot of Central and South American countries, Philippines, India, Pakistan, one of the biggest advantages is the cost of living in those countries is significantly lower than in the U.S. So you're able to hire someone to do a job in those countries for significantly less than if you were to hire someone to do the same job in the US. And so that's a big deal, right? Especially as a solopreneur. And, you know, so that comes with some disadvantages though as well, right? Because usually the big ones are going to be language. So you know, a lot of times there's a language difference. But you know, a lot of those countries, because so much of their economy relies on virtual assistants, you know, language is not as big of an issue as it used to be. Time difference is going to be another one, right? And so especially for the Asian countries, that's why outsourcing to Central American and South American countries are increasing, because you don't have that time difference. But, you know, the biggest one that I've seen, and there's ways to address this, but just kind of covering kind of disadvantage right now, is, you know, a lot of cases you're paying the virtual assistant, well, actually, no, I'm sorry, you're paying for the virtual assistant $10 an hour or less. And usually if that's through a company, then you're not paying the virtual assistant that, you're paying a company that, and there's profit in there. And then the virtual assistant's probably getting a small percentage of that, right? And so, you know, even in the lower cost of living countries, you're getting someone that's, you know, not going to be as skilled as someone that you're paying much more. And so if you're not aware of that, and you're thinking, hey, I'm just, you know, you're treating that virtual assistant as someone that's going to be like a college educated, you know, graduate that's, you know, making 50K a year, and you're giving them tasks in the same way you would that person, you're going to be unpleasantly surprised. And I've talked to enough people that have been unpleasantly surprised to know that that's a thing. Right. So, you know, they'll come away walking away from, oh, virtual, you know, outsourcing doesn't work. Well, no, if you do it correctly, it does. And if you outsource the right stuff, it does. But if you try and, you know, outsource and work as if they're employees, then you're going to run into some challenges.
Yeah. I mean, I've got contractors doing, I mean, Carly basically is my outsourced young friendly person, because
that just happens to do marketing sometimes.
I'm just kidding. Yeah, no, she's you know, I'm not a marketing person. I've never pretended to be, and it was like, I'm not going to learn it now. So, you know, Carly came on board, but she's a contractor, and you know, yeah. I wouldn't call her a virtual assistant in the sense that, you know, sometimes I'm helping her as opposed to her helping me, but she's doing that. I've got community manager. I've got people doing accounting, bookkeeping. I've got a kind of a more standard virtual assistant. So it's really powerful, but there's lots of ways to do it. And it really does help you scale.
And yeah, you bring up a good point, Joe, that I failed to mention as one of the advantages. One of the advantages is, if you do it correctly, you can have experts, a bunch of different experts doing a small piece, as opposed to one person or yourself who may not be an expert in a certain area. You're gaining a whole bunch of expertise with outsourcing that you wouldn't be able to kind of gain, right, if you tried to do everything your own. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. I put a spreadsheet together called Hire a Pro or No, and basically takes all that stuff into account, you know, whatever job it is, you know, like, you know, can you hire somebody that's better at it than you? Can you hire somebody that can do it cheaper than you? And there's all these different combinations, and it kind of weighs in on whether you should, you know, consider hiring somebody else or do it yourself.
So solopreneurs helping solopreneurs, we just talked about that. But, and Joe, you mentioned where you kind of look for help. Stan, where do you outsource within your business? Like, what areas? What areas can people outsource? Because a lot of times people think it's just like accounting or actual assistant task, but what kinds of things can be outsourced?
Yeah, so I think probably I suspect a lot of them are going to be similar to Joe. So I have a bookkeeping team, one, because I hate bookkeeping. And the problem with bookkeeping is if you don't do it consistently, it gets to be a big mess in a hurry, right? So, you know, now I can get bookkeeping inexpensively that it doesn't make sense not to do that. So bookkeeping is definitely one. The other one that I've had a lot of success with is, especially on the e-commerce side, is customer service. So with my customer service team, I have a 24/7 customer service team. So I've got two customer service teams. One is a chat and email team. That one is based in Pakistan. And then I have another one that's a phone call based, that's based in the US, just because, you know, people are biased against talking to people with accents. So kind of having a US team is helpful there. And so, you know, I'm able to do it. I used to have one single virtual assistant do that. And so I went from a situation where I had one virtual assistant that did everything for me, including customer service, and she wasn't the best at customer service, to now I get 24/7 coverage, right? But it's a shared team. And I'm actually paying significantly less to get 24/7 coverage. Right. And I have a team that all they do is provide customer service for e-commerce businesses. And so they're really good at it. They, you know, and a lot of times when there's difficult situations, they'll come back and say, hey, this is how we handle it. You know, we've handled this kind of situation like this for other customers. And so you've got someone with all that expertise coming to you with recommendations versus your virtual assistant is coming to you with everything like, what do I do here? What do I do here? What do I do here? And so that's really, you know, that's, kind of that expert in a very specific thing has been really successful. So, I have, outsourced developers, as well. I've got an outsourced digital marketing team. So they build funnels for me. They set up campaigns for me. I'll kind of oversee the campaigns, but Carly, I know you're in digital marketing. I'm sure Joe, you've done a little bit as well. I mean, those campaigns can be very tedious to set up. So kind of, here's, you know, providing someone with a framework of a campaign, say, hey, go build these campaigns. That saves me just a ton of time. I'm sure there's a few more. I have an Amazon store that I've got a team that kind of handles, you know, ordering the products, customer service, returns and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I think that's most of my teams that I have.
Well, so with that, what are some tips for finding the right team or the right VA or whoever? Because I'd imagine it's not always roses and butterflies every single time you sign on. So how can people go about finding the right person to work with?
Yeah. So high level, the first thing that you have to do before you outsource is you look at the total universe of all the tasks that you have and just break them down into the absolute simplest pieces that you possibly can. And I think that's the part that most people fail to do because it's the hardest, right? Most people don't want to do the hardest task. And usually kind of breaking those tasks down. And a friend of mine that I was talking to about virtual assistant, he didn't listen to me and he didn't do that. And he just kind of handed a bunch of stuff to, you know, VA team. He's like, oh yeah, that didn't work for me. And I was like, well, yeah, the reason why is you didn't do the heavy lifting on the front end. And so just breaking that down into the smallest level tasks that you possibly can. And then from there, you know, you're going to identify, okay, now that you've broken down those tasks, you need to figure out, okay, what expertise do I need for these tasks? And then it's about finding outsourcing teams for that. I generally like to go after teams versus individual virtual assistants or freelancers generally, just because there's some redundancies in there. From there, I think the most successful kind of tip I can give for someone as they're vetting out vendors for outsourcing is have just a test project to work with them on, right? Something that's relatively small, but you know, it helps because I know enough about all the things I outsource that I kind of know what I'm looking for. So that's the only caveat is make sure you know enough to know what's good versus bad. And I think that's a challenge that maybe some solopreneurs run into. So you do have to do some education of yourself as far as, you know, what's a good bookkeeping team supposed to do? What's a good digital marketing team supposed to do? And part of that could be in your vetting process, talking to enough vendors that you kind of educate yourself that way. But once you kind of narrow it down, I definitely recommend working with a really small test project, nothing too big, but enough for kind of someone to kind of hang themselves, right? So where you can see, like, if they're not going to work from a communication style standpoint, or they clearly don't know what they're talking about, you know, a project that really kind of brings some of that out. Because what I've learned over the years between interviewing and working with different vendors is people can sound really good and competent during an interview, and they can suck when it actually comes to doing what you need them to do. So you want to have kind of a real life, you know, trial by fire type of quote unquote interview process, right? And I think a test project is the best way to do that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, no, that's a great answer, and I think would be super helpful for our listeners. And I cannot believe we're already near the end of this episode. But we have a curveball question that we ask every guest, at least we did in the first season. We're going to continue now. And that is, do you have a favorite quote about success?
I absolutely do. And, you know, I used to talk to a lot of every year there was a program I used to talk to high school students in West Philadelphia that were learning about financial literacy and entrepreneurship. And I would always share this. And it's funny, I heard them starting to quote, they use the same quote in some of their presentations. So it's pretty cool. So yeah, my favorite quote is, luck is when opportunity meets preparation. And I'm a big fan of that, because really my interpretation of that is you can create your own luck, and you can create your own luck by just outworking everyone else and educating yourself, right? And so by doing that, you just put yourself in a lot more opportunities than your competitors do. And so that's really how you create luck. So yeah, that's by far, for probably 15, 20 years now, has been my favorite quote for success.
We have an ebook on lifestar.com, shameless plug, that's like all about inspiration and motivation. It has a lot of quotes in there, and that's one of them. And it was one of my favorite quotes in that ebook. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So, Zan, this is the conclusion of the episode. If people want to learn more about you, your businesses, social channels, whatever, where can they find you?
Yeah. So, the website is drivephase.co. So it's drivephase.co, not .com. So it's .co. And all the social channels are drivephase.co. Are the handles for that. So, and they're actually on my website as well. So, you know, love to, you know, happy to chat with everyone. You know, on the site, you can schedule a free consultation. So I'm always able to, you know, happy to talk to anyone. And if we can't help you directly, I always try and have them walk away with something of value from those consultations, whether they're working with me or not. So
great. And we will include all of that in our show notes. People can access you as well as the rest of your bio, because it was so extensive. I didn't want to say all of it here, but and that was it. This has been so great. Joe, is there anything else you want to say?
No, just thank you, Sam. It's a pleasure as always. Love interacting with you in the Lifestar community. Shameless plug again, community.lifestar.com. And we'll catch you there. And we'll probably have other fun stuff coming up. I'll see you at some of the events. So awesome. Thanks so much for doing this.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Happy to help out.
It's been so fun. And listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. If you like what you hear or you see now, we're finally doing video podcasts. Be sure to subscribe in any of your podcast locations or on YouTube. I don't know where the subscribe thing is from my screen, but you subscribe on YouTube in this video. And we will see you next time.
You may be going solo in business, but that doesn't mean you're alone. In fact, millions of people are in your shoes, running a one-person business and figuring it out as they go. So why not connect with them and learn from each other's successes and failures? At Lifestar, we're creating a one-person business community where you can go to meet and get advice from other solopreneurs. Be sure to join in on the conversations at community.lifestar.com. That's community.lifestar with two R's.com.